church.
So good afternoon. What is your name?
Kimberlyn Bryant.
Kimberlyn, nice to meet you, Kimberlyn.
Pleased to meet you.
So how long have you lived in Oakland and what part of Oakland?
I first moved to Oakland back in 1984.
Okay.
And that was in the Fruitvale District is when I lived in East Oakland back in 1984.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And where do you live now?
On Lockwood at 73rd.
Okay, still in East
right
Oakland.
Over there by Brookett's. Uh-huh.
Okay. So who are you? What do you see yourself? How do you see yourself, like, as a woman?
So at this point in my life, I see that just as a server, like just serving the needs of people, you know. And so I've served my family as a mother. I've served a husband as a wife. I'm no longer married. I've served, you know, my church. I've served, you know, the young people. I've served my mom, my sisters and brothers, you know, come from just from a place of serving and giving and helping.
Caring,
mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm,
okay. And how did you arrive where you are today?
Oh, God, how much time do we have?
We have a couple minutes. You can tell us about your journey.
So I, as a 12-year-old child, I remember coming from a two-parent family house where we sat down for dinner together every day. Mom cooked, Dad worked, and on Saturday, Mom would open the windows and everybody would do chores, including Dad. That's where I come from, right? And we, Dad would sit down and eat a loaf of bread at every meal, and it was like he was eating bread for us all, you know? So I come from that generation. And then at 12 years old, my parents separated, divorced. You know, we had a family business, which was kind of it shut down, and just, you know, my life went into crisis as a 12-year-old. At the same time, when my life was going to go into crisis because the age I was, right? So, I feel like those are the years that really made me, because they gave me a lot of fears and insecurities, but they also gave me hope and, you know, and endurance, you know, and it gave me both things, right? But what I chose to become was more isolated, you know what I mean, in my pain, you know, of my family being uprooted, no more family dinners, no more Saturday chores, no more nice neighborhood, because now I was a child two of seven of a single mom. And so life dealt me a hard blow on that one that I wasn't quite prepared for, right? So I became very, very introvert, very shy, real awkward socially. And that's how I would explain my informative years from 12 to 18 when I was going through high school. You know, I never had a boyfriend. I never became a part of a group. You know, I didn't have anyone really that I talked to or shared anything with. And so by the time I got 17, I got thrown into, you know, I love learning, you know. I've always loved learning, and I still love learning, right?
So it's an outlet.
Yes. And watching my mother struggle and raising seven kids gave me a lot of, are we okay?
Yeah.
Gave me a lot of, I would sit back and watch her to see how she approached life on life's terms. And she was always optimistic. I never saw her cry. I never saw her break down. And no challenge, she was going to come up with the solution. That was my mom, right? Just strong and bold.
Very
and
strong.
You know, but I remember one specific incident where I was in the room and Mom was getting dressed, and I was just kind of like a little fly on the wall as the life I had taken on of myself. And I saw Mom get out her size 10 panties, you know, in there. And when she went to put them on, they were full of holes. And my mom never said a mumbling word. You know, she never complained. She never said anything, you know. She put on them, you know, holy panties and her dress on, and she was, you know, facing the world. And so I took on that. You know, I took on that. And by the time I got 17 or 18, it had come into its fullness. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to be like Mom. There's nothing that's going to keep me down. And I went into the world as an adult. mm-hmm. like that, you know. Oh, and wow. so I started out with a really, really good job working for the phone company, right. but I was pregnant, mm-hmm. and I was pregnant. I loved, you know, I was almost about to graduate high school, and I wanted to grow up and be rich and famous and have butlers and maids, and all those dreams right. felt crushed at that moment. Uh-huh. But because of the spirit that my mother had passed on to me, I was like determined I'm going to do something with this, and I did. Oh, and I ended up, you know, going to a skills and business school, because that was back then they were training us all yes. these secretaries as right. women, right?
Right.
And then and I got connected with a woman that worked for the unemployment office, and back then they really did help you find jobs.
Yes.
So
yes.
she helped me find a job at a school district. Okay. And then I did that for a couple years, and then I went into a career of a business world. I went to work for the phone company.
Oh, okay.
And I worked for the phone company for 17 years and just really learned business.
Right.
You know, computers and business, and mm-hmm. had four daughters. I had been married, and so I had a chance to live the life that a two-parent family with my kids, right?
Yes.
Well, funny enough, mm-hmm. it's cycles repeat themselves. After okay. being married and my youngest kids were 12 years old, then
oh,
me
wow.
and my ex-husband went through the same thing my parents did, right? Uh-huh. So life had repeated itself okay. again. That's a little bit about my journey, but as in the corporate world, I served there while I was raising my kids. But after my kids got old enough and I went through a crisis in my mm-hmm. life, I needed something more. I needed okay. to do and be a part of something that was really, really meaningful, mm-hmm. right? And that's where I found community organizing. And uh-huh. community organizing was like a secret society. It's like, what is this? And, you know, it's really a long story about how I found it, but I moved into being a community organizer. And I found that all the things that I had been through in life, mm-hmm. all the skills that I had learned, all the pain and everything found its place.
Wow.
It just somehow
yes.
clicked and made life made sense then, and my experiences had made sense then. And then I moved to a place of wanting to find the people that had became like me. Mm-hmm. Like life had been so tough right. that pain just, you know, gripped my soul, you know. Right. And so as a community organizer, I wanted to find those people because I knew those people had greatness in them.
Right.
And if I could just find them, Lord help me find them and share my heart with them, you know, so that they can come out of that feeling of isolation
yes.
with your pain and see that pain has a purpose, mm-hmm. that you can use it to make a difference in the world.
Right.
Like you can change your circumstances and... You know, and I'm not saying that I'm the president. I never had the desire to be the president, but I am somebody.
Right.
And so that was the mission that I was on, mm-hmm. and I'm still on that mission. And so I find people that are, you know, people don't even know exist.
Right.
You know, have no voice, no power, and just drowning in pain and sorrow.
Right.
right. And I will walk up to your door. I am the one that might knock at your door on a Saturday morning in the deepest, deepest part of East Oakland, and you'd be like, what are you doing here? Well, I'm here because I want to talk to you. I want to hear your story. I want to bring you out of that place and bring your greatness out. You know, that's I wanted your greatness to come out, because out of all that you've been through in life, that came so that you can use it to get to where you're supposed to be going in your greatness. So
and help someone else along the way.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. So
thank you.
You live in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
You work in Oakland. You do great work for
mm-hmm.
people in the city of Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So, what does gentrification mean to you? What's going on now? And
so the
city?
Way that I describe gentrification, it's like a it comes from the outside. So somebody. Look at this prize. You know, look at that land. It's so prime. It's so and they have a dream for what they want that land to look like. And that dream doesn't include anybody that's poor. It doesn't include anybody that's homeless. It doesn't include children, orphans, widows. It doesn't include any of those people that the Bible tells us we should be watching out for. Their idea excludes all those people. And it's not, this didn't just start happening, right? But it's like a python that squeezes the life out of a community and renders it dead and throws it down and then takes it over. So the physical way that I've seen historically, and it's been around for a very long time. It's just that now in Oakland,
yes,
it's lurking.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like a vulture to me, right? Mm-hmm. It comes from, and I say python because it comes from the outside. It didn't come right in the middle because it's scared to come in the middle because then we'll see it, right? But after it's, the idea starts to manifest itself, it starts from the outside and it squeezes until the life is gone out of your community. So that's how I describe gentrification.
Very good description. Yes. So how has living in Oakland impacted you?
I think for me, so I told you that I first moved to Fruitvale in 84, but my life took a very long journey.
Right.
Okay, I'm an older woman now, I'm 57 now. Back then I was 23, right? Okay. So so what I have found is that just that cycle of coming through Oakland, going to other places, and ultimately coming back home is that living in Oakland has affected me so profoundly because I saw what it was like when it was booming.
Right.
You know what I mean? I lived here when it was booming and folks, colored folks, you know, black people, you know, even Latina folks were, you know, beginning to come and, you know, just, it was booming, you know, there were jobs, people were buying homes and on and on and on, you know. And then I come back through 20 years later and it's like, all the storefronts closed down, you know, and I was at Eastmont Mall, and I'm like, what? This ain't even a mall anymore. You know what I'm saying? And police department right here. And the first thing that I experienced was, I was here. I came back the year that Mixon killed four police officers.
Oh, okay, that was 2011?
Nine.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's Oscar Grant. Just a lot happened in 2009, right? 2011, yeah. Right. In that period, yes. So I think what it did for me is to know that there was so much violence in Oakland. And not just, but I mean, for somebody to kill four police officers, things have changed.
Right.
Because, you know, back in Black Panther's day, you know, there was not, you know, that, it didn't go down like that.
Right.
Here, all these years later, you know, it's like that's, you know, seeing Mixon killed four police officers and then him himself getting killed. And he wasn't none but in his 20s.
Right.
Went to his casket and touched him. And, you know, I don't have fears about a dead body, you know what I mean? But just to know that his hands were covered because they had been shot totally off, and he's a 20-some-odd-year-old man.
So it was an open casket, though.
Yeah, okay. It was. And then in that same week, the level of violence starts rising. See, it brings unrest in everyone.
Right.
When any violence happens, it brings unrest in the whole
community.
Universe.
Yeah.
I mean, really, to be honest with you, we look at what's happening now, and I'm going off subject some, but if we look at what's happening now on a global scale, like we're all connected, and we're all interconnected, and when we're starting to see these images of our men being shot down and killed, it causes an unrest in the entire universe. It's like the soul of the universe is like in turmoil and crisis, and so the violence just rises, you know, when a violent event is of that magnitude, and that's what happened with Mixon. Like, and so within that same week, the violence really started rising. And I was coming out of Eastmont Mall. I was doing some work there. I was coming out of Eastmont Mall, and I saw, you know, ambulance and red lights and yellow tape, and I had never seen this kind of scene before, because I had never really by this time seen somebody that had been shot.
Right.
But I come out and there's a car, it had been sprayed with bullets.
Oh my.
There was a body hanging out of the car. There was somebody they were putting on the ambulance. Somebody was already dead. It was just really a horrific scene.
Right.
Like something you might see in a movie.
Right.
And this is happening right here in my community. And it had a deeply profound effect on me because, like I said, if I want to change the world and if I want to help people, how do you help? how do you get through and past the violence? Right. You can get killed yourself, right? You get into the violence. And so it had a profound effect on me wanting to talk to young black men in Oakland.
Okay.
So every time there was a shooting or yellow tape, mm-hmm. I'm riding through, I would stop, get out, and I'd go straight and talk to the young men. It's
really?
Like, how is this affecting you? Yeah. The mamas, how is this affecting me? Every crime scene that I would see. I mean, eventually it started to traumatize me, so I had to slow back a little bit, but I needed in my soul to know, like, how is this affecting you? You know what I mean? So so it really fueled the work that I do. You know what I mean? It really feels, and I say the work that I do, but I believe that this is a calling for me.
Yeah.
That I could go and knock at a door and find a 16, 17-year-old young black man there, and he immediately connect with me, and we can have this deeper, profound conversation.
It's a gift,
you know?
And that's why God put you here.
Right. That's what I believe to be so. That's what I believe to be so.
You had to go through what you went through in order to get where you are so that you can help someone else.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. That's right, that's right.
Yes, good. So, what do you love most about this, about your community, and what one thing, just one thing would you change?
So what I love most is the sense of community, like this thing that I'm out here today. Who does this but Oakland?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I can go down to Eastside, I can come to EOYDC, I can go to Youth Uprising, it's all black folks or people of color, and we eating together and we, you know, doing cultural stuff. I love that.
Yes.
I love that. It just makes my blood like, oh God. And it's not televised, right?
Never.
The only people that are going to come to stuff like this are people that are part of our community.
Right.
So I love it.
Right.
I love it. It just makes my blood pump. So that's what I love. The one thing that I would change is, I would change some physical things. I would change specific targeted areas and build them up. So we have
targeted by violence or
no, just like the least taken care of.
Okay.
Like down right now, my. Okay, I'm almost done. Like right now, I'm down. If you think about where 57th Avenue is, there's absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There, Rainbow Rec is there, but Rainbow Rec been sitting there for 50 years and having nothing done to it. So that's what I would like to change. Is I would like to see us because I feel like gentrification is already happening and it's squeezing. And so instead of trying to fight those forces, I'd like to see us make some physical changes in our environment that are going to help the people that are going to be here, because there are going to still be some people here.
Right.
You know, so make sure that there's some, you know. Training centers, grocery stores, that, you know, these abandoned properties are functional and doing something and serving the people that live there. So that's what I would change. I would change the physical.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. What do you hope for your future? And do you see yourself living in Oakland for the next 10, 20 years?
So what I see for my future is always being on the ground with the people that are still, I mean, there's always going to be a segment of poor people, disenfranchised people, and so I would always see myself working with those people in some capacity. As for me, I don't, there's no way I can afford to stay here, you know?
Oh, really?
I mean, absolutely no way. It's already high.
Yes.
So it's already, you know, $1,500 for a two-bedroom that is just real shell box, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I know that there, and it's only going to get worse.
Right.
You know, so I don't see how I could stay here. I mean, where would I live? Because I don't own a home.
Right.
Now, if I owned a home, that would be different. You know, like I know some of my friends that own homes, and they ain't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. I rent an apartment. You know, so how could I possibly stay here? So actually, I'm already thinking about where can I move to outside of Oakland and get something for my money.
Right. Are you being forced out right now?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So you live in an apartment and they're
raising
rent
all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Because you sign a year lease at the end of the lease. If you want to stay, then okay, well, now the rent's this, you know?
Right.
So it's like either you want to stay and pay the rent or you don't. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it started at $1,095. It's up to $1,600 already. And it's a small Cracker Jack box apartment.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't see how I could stay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I love it and I'd love to stay, but I can't afford it now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, so did you bring any photos or anything with you?
Physical?
Yes.
No, they're all on my phone.
What do you have on your phone that you want to talk about?
Or
a photo that's significant to you that, well, I'm sure they all are. You've taken them, but. Anyone you would like to share? And
I'll share this one. And that's my three grandsons.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
This one came and stayed with me in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And he got shell shocked. Like everything. Is that a gunshot? Is that a gunshot? Is that a gunshot? Because he was with me.
Huh? Where was he visiting from?
From Sacramento.
Okay.
But he was with me at Eastmont one day when we saw blood and a shooting and stuff, so it traumatized him. So, I mean, I've worked with him through that, so he's not traumatized now. He loves Oakland now. He wants to go to Rainbow Rec all the time and play basketball. But that's my youngest grandson, okay? And he's big and he's buckling and he's dark-skinned, and, you know, has very African features. Yeah, very handsome. It's like just, I have three grandsons and statistics, you know, but you know, we can overcome statistics, right? So that's my youngest one. This is my middle one. Now, believe it or not, he is a genius. And we just recently find out that he's on this engineering track in high school. He's trying not to make no big deal of it, but he's actually on a track that they put him on to be able to go to a college and do engineering. Now, this
is very humble.
He's very humble. He is. You okay?
Yes, I'm just going to get some water.
Okay. And y'all keep talking.
Yes.
And then the third one is my oldest grandson, which he moved from Georgia here.
Okay.
At a time when he was like 9th and 10th grade, starting to cut school, hang around with friends that were not going to school and doing things they shouldn't have been doing, and his mother moved him from. You got something in there? That could help you? Okay, all right, all right. Well, I'll just keep talking, okay? If that's not rude.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine. My oldest grandson moved from Georgia to Sacramento because he was started to get in trouble. He had lost interest in school, and he was just kind of going a bad path. And his mom brought him here, and the first thing he did is he came here to Oakland with me. And I took him to Rainbow Rec, where they have a digital arts and culinary arts school.
Really?
Uh-huh. See, people don't even know this. And he went in there, and those girls were like, oh, come on, let us show you. And they just really embraced him. And he had never had that happen before, right? Just because of the sense of community that our kids in Copeland have, it's really unique.
Wow.
And unless you've been in other places, you don't really realize how unique and beautiful it is here, right? And so it did something inside of him. And then, of course, having me as his grandmother, it's like, I'm not losing one of mine, you know what I'm saying? Without, you know, I'm going to give it all that I have to give. So today, he's gone through a lot, you know, and trying to make sense of the world, you know, and his place in the world. So he finally graduated from high school, and he chose to go to a two-year college, and he works for like a grocery store chain. And he's getting ready to turn 20, but he made it through some very difficult times. But I bring his name, I show you that picture because these are really my pride and joy when it comes to black men, you know. And he came here to me a couple of months ago, and he said, Grandma, I'm scared. I'm living in a world where I'm scared. I go to college and somebody comes to the school and starts shooting.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm going out, hanging out with my friends and to a party, and somebody gets killed. You know, so he's living with this daily, challenging his manhood of what it means to be able to keep going on your journey and still be afraid, you know? So yeah, that's the picture that I would share with you, is about my three grandsons and, you know, the challenge to beat all odds and all statistics in all three of them, you know. You know, one day when they give me grandkids or they find a wife or they find their place in life, I just want to take a picture of them. And I want that picture to be buried with me, you know.
Nice. Oh, that's so sweet. You really love your family. It means a lot to you.
Yeah.
Great. So, our last question for you to wrap up this interview. What does Oakland mean to you?
Culture, history, life, the struggle, successes and overcoming. Oakland is the world to me. You know, I'm going to live the rest of my life making the people of Oakland better, making Oakland better. It's my life. It's the equivalent of my life. And that's Oakland to me, you know, to struggle and fight to make sure that we keep this beautiful culture that we have, and that we wrap our arms around our children and show them that they're loved and show them a way through this mess and make some sense of this world. And Oakland is beautiful, you know, the weather is beautiful,
yes,
the
it is.
People are beautiful, and it's just like when I saw you today and you were smiling, that's a light to me. It's like, can we continue to smile despite what's happening, you know what I mean? And I think of Oakland like an oak tree, right? Mm-hmm. The oak tree has the deepest, deepest roots of any tree, and those deep, deep roots down there, they're sucking up nourishment to be able to give to the branches and the leaves of the tree. And that's how I see.
Withstand.
Yes, yes, yes. It can't be moved.
Right.
It cannot be moved because its roots are so, so deep.
Right.
So that's the oak tree in Oakland to me.
Yes.
You know,
oh, wow.
Our roots are so, so deep here that they'll always be here.
That's actually beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time.
This has been such a pleasure. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that I got.